Hello and welcome to Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Jared taking care of us. And hey, the Nashville Predators, for the first time in franchise history, have a 40-goal scorer. And it's Matt Duchene. I know Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, we're vying for that. Matt Duchene made it happen. I know it's been one of those things when you think about just going back to what the last two seasons have been like for Matt Duchene. I don't think many people thought that Matt Duchene was going to be the one to set the franchise record as the first 40-goal scorer in franchise history. Now, Philip Forsberg's only one away at 39, and he's most likely, I can't see a situation where he doesn't unless something drastic happens. Knock on wood.
I'd hate to see that situation happen where it didn't happen. If he's at 39, it's got to come, right?
It's got to happen, Glenn. I mean, he got one last night to get him up to 39, so one away. And I know that we've been talking about the story too, is that can you imagine this team having two 40-goal scorers and potentially not making the playoffs? Like, it's crazy to imagine that. But because their play has been so up and down coming to the close of the season, that's potential. That's going to be really difficult. Those 2 points they got in that victory last night were incredibly, incredibly important to put some space between them and Vegas/Vancouver, the really, you know, pushing ahead Vancouver Canucks. So those 2 points are huge, but they're right on the bubble right now as a team. And offensively, just we have not seen an offensive output from this team in a generation.
Well, yeah. I mean, you think about the team that went all the way to the Stanley Cup final in 2016, 2017, we didn't have any 40 plus goal scorers on the team, and look how far they went. So it's like you said, Justin, it's wild to imagine that you could possibly at this point, with Philip Forsberg being within one goal, having two. I mean, you have to make it, and you have to go pretty far. But like we all know, the ebbs and the flows of every single team, and we've seen it with the Predators even recently. You just never know. But I just can't imagine a scenario where this doesn't take them far.
Absolutely. And continuing on with that, and just the reaction from his teammates, especially Philip Forsberg, hauling butt to try to get that puck. When it happened, I mean, he hustled.
I don't even think that Forsberg would have shown that much excitement if he had scored his 40th last night. He was so happy. I mean, they were on it. They weren't going to let that game in until he got it. So you love to see that.
And in the most Predator way, how that 40th goal was scored. I mean, it wasn't beautiful by any means. It was ugly. Yeah, it was dirty. It bounced off of people. It doesn't matter. It was a goal. A goal is a goal. And especially when you are pushing towards the playoffs, a goal is a goal. So it was fantastic to see the celebration and the way the crowd acknowledged it too, and how Matt Duchene was even just like, they kept applauding, and I had to acknowledge them somehow.
Oh, I know. And you think about, we typically like to joke, you know, a Calgary game on a Tuesday night.
Oh gosh, yeah.
That didn't feel like that at all. To me, I felt like there was almost, you almost knew something was going to happen, especially in those few minutes before he scored his 40th. You almost just felt it. It definitely didn't feel like our typical Calgary on a Tuesday night game.
No, not when so much is on the line as well. And looking at the standings right now, there's still plenty of work to be done. As we've said before, the East, we know what's happening in the East. They're still working on seeding in the East. That's taken care of. The West, on the other hand, I mean, Minnesota, St. Louis are basically just battling for who's going to have home ice advantage because no one's catching Colorado. And then Calgary obviously is going to have home ice in the Pacific. And then you have Edmonton, LA, and kind of throw Vegas in there battling for those positions as well. So it's an interesting battle with the wild card because LA, even Edmonton, not really likely to happen, could fall down to a wild card spot depending on how the other teams around them go, especially if Vancouver's pushing. Vancouver's 6-2-2 in their last 10 games, or 87 points. And so Vancouver right now is 4 points out of a playoff spot. Dallas has a game in hand that they're at 91 points. Vegas is also at 87 points. So the Predators have a really good cushion with a 6-point lead with 5 games to go. I mean, that the 6-point cushion, that's huge, especially with the teams they have coming in. And we're going to keep saying that because they're playing teams that are the favorite to win against them, aside from Arizona, because they're god-awful.
Yeah. It's not going to be easy. You need as much cushion as you can get when you've got the climb that they have in front of them right now.
Did you just do Miley Cyrus on us?
Ooh, maybe. If you start singing it for the rest of the night, don't blame me.
About the climb. This is also a potential first round matchup as well. And these two teams are going to meet again next Tuesday. So it'll be another Tuesday night against Calgary at home. It's going to be like deja vu when these teams play again, because of all things, it has to be again on Tuesday night at home against Calgary. And those used to be the most boring games, but that could be very much a potential first round matchup just a week before that happens.
Oh yeah, definitely some playoff vibes, I think. I think we started to see a little bit of that last night just with the energy, but I think there's definitely going to be some playoff vibes next Tuesday.
Now, on the other hand, let's also look at Roman Josi, what he continues to do. I mean, he's continuing to rack up some assists. I mean, he's at 89 points right now, 69 assists. Nice. And just what he's been able to accomplish this season, he slowed down just a little bit. But at 89 points, in terms of most all-time by defensemen in a single season, that ties him at 26th overall with Paul Coffey.
Good, great.
So, again, we mentioned this a few weeks ago. The only names above Roman Josi are names like McInnes, Bork, Coffey, Bork, Potvin, Bork, Coffey, Bork, Housley, Potvin, or
and the regular season not quite over.
No, so not quite over.
I
fully expect Roman Josi to get to at least 93 or 94 points. That would put him potentially in the top 20 if he gets to 94. If he gets to 95, for sure in the top 20, tied at 19. It's obviously going to be difficult for him to get to 100. But again, the names that he's surrounded by in that just shows the type of season he is having for the Nashville Predators team. On top of that, like what we mentioned earlier in the program, with two 40 goal scorers, one still yet to happen, but potentially two 40 goal scorers, and Roman Josi having just not just an all-star caliber year, but a Norris Trophy caliber year, but a Hall of Fame worthy season in terms of what he's doing and the names that he's going to be associated with in terms of all-time scoring in a season for defensemen.
It's kind of unbelievable. And I think the reason why, I mean, not to say that he goes unnoticed by the league by any means, because as of lately, he does not. But I think that it's just easy for him to fly under the radar, because I've talked often on the show just about, he just plays a very quiet game. He does the right things, but he's not this loud presence, if you will. And so I think he's just kind of flown under the radar. I think we've all known that he had the capability, right? And it's just finally we're seeing in one season his best work is all coming out at the same time. And it's pretty impressive, like you said, Justin, of the names that he's going to be associated with. It's kind of mind-blowing, and that we still have some regular season left. And I mean, he's at 89. It will be tough to get to 100, but if you get one, two games of him getting a couple of, you know, even just a couple of assists here and there, he's already in great company.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And looking at what right behind him, Cale Makar is 83 points in 72 games. So there's 6-point lead Roman Josi, because he did kind of cool off. But it's going to be difficult for Cale Makar to catch up as well. 6 points and very few games left for the Colorado Avalanche in the regular season too. But it's got to be Roman Josi. It has got to be Roman Josi with what he's been able to accomplish this season too, and how the team you could argue, obviously, like a Matthew Shannon, Philip Forsberg, and putting the team, but it's Roman Josi has put the team on his back. I mean, overall with the performance. Yeah, 100%, just because of the types of games he's played, where he has completely willed the team to victory.
Yep. And he's, like you said, he's cooled off a tiny bit, but you can only go so far before a little bit of a cool down. But for the majority of this season, he has been insanely consistent. If there was ever an ebb and flow, Roman Josi has stayed consistent throughout. So yeah, I mean, he's definitely been the backbone of this team this year. So it pains me. It pains me to imagine him not taking the Norris away this year. It really does.
It truly does. And I know we'll talk about it later. I mean, up next, we're going to have Sean Smith of On the Forecheck joining us to talk more about the Predators. And then after that, we're going to have Scott Wren of the National Flyer Hockey. Good friend of the show. He's been on this season already to talk about another charity hockey event that's coming up for the National Flyer Hockey program. But then before we get to that real quick, we will discuss this later, but just wanted to plant the seed of Juuse Saros has played 65 games this season. David Rittich has played 13. He's only started 10.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a little insane. I mean, the back-to-back starting was questioned by a lot of folks, and deservedly so. And we saw how that ended up with starting him on the back-to-back like that. This is, I know you're pushing for the playoffs, but you're not going to do anything in the playoffs.
You also have to be ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, if your goalie's fried. So I mean, this is the biggest load of games that he has had to carry, obviously, in his entire career, and he's being thrust into that position. But if you have a capable backup, you got to be able to use them. We'll discuss that more with Sean, and also later on the show, because we had a question come in on that from Twitter. I just want to plant that seed. Be thinking about that, because it is definitely some cause for concern in terms of how much you wear him out, because the teams are playing against will wear him out. All right. Up next, let's talk with Sean Smith of On the Forecheck. We're going to talk National Predators up next. Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Jared taking care of us. Appreciate you, Jared. Up next, Sean Smith on the forecheck joining us. Been on here before. So happy to have him back. Sean, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty good, Justin. I'm really happy to be back as well. Glenn, nice to talk to you again, too.
You too. We're excited to have you, Sean.
He's so polite. That's what happens when you get a teacher. Sean, so Matt Duchene, 40 goal scorer. If you were a betting man, which I don't, maybe you are, would you have thought he would be the one to break that? Or did you think it'd be another player, say Philip Forsberg or somebody else?
So no, I'm not a betting man, and I'm happy to say that, but at the same time, look, you said there were probably a lot of people out there who doubted Matt Duchene. And I really think when I look back on last season, I feel like, you know, you heard the term snake bit a lot when they were talking about Matt Duchene. He seemed like he was doing everything right, except for finding the back of the net. And I, probably alone on an island all by myself, had faith that Matt Duchene would turn it around. And especially, I think, being dangled out there in the expansion draft, not being taken, I think that lit a fire under him. And I think you're seeing the results of that now.
And Sean, speaking of Duchene, I love John Hines' answer to your question last night in the post game about how the team is playing for each other and Philip Forsberg's excitement on Duchene's 40th goal and that being a perfect example of that. How impactful do you think that mentality of playing for your team versus playing for yourselves is for this Preds team as they try to continue into the postseason?
I think it's really important. And I want to say that I think there was kind of a desire early on in the season when you started to see those two guys kind of heat up and they were kind of back and forth and neck with goals. There was a desire, I think. And I know I felt it, but I wanted them to have some kind of, I mean, even if it was a friendly competition, to feel like there was a competition. And when you've really tried to push them to make a statement like that, they didn't just refuse. They pointed out, they're like, no, you know, we want to do what's best for the team. And if he scores a goal, that's what's best for the team. If I need to score the goal, that's what's best for the team. We're supporting each other. We're making sure that each other gets the job done. And like you said earlier, no one looked happier for Matt Duchene than Philip Forsberg when he scored his 40th goal. And that's a big milestone. He's the first National Predator with a 40-goal season. Philip Forsberg very easily could have done that himself in the game last night, and Duchene got it instead. He's always going to be the first Predator with 40 goals, even if Forsberg comes back and scores one in the next game. And he could have been upset about it, but he wasn't. He celebrated his teammate. That's the kind of – I mean, playing for each other is not just – the physical side of things and standing up for one another, but it's also that stripping down of the ego and really just saying, I'm going to do what's best for the team and I'm going to support my teammates. And you're starting to see that pay off.
And despite some questionable results in games lately, like, I don't know, St. Louis, Edmonton, what do you see this team doing right? We can talk all day about the things that go wrong, but what do you see this team doing right as of lately, even during these ebbs and flows? And do you see those things being sustainable down the stretch in the event that they do land themselves in a playoff spot?
So I think it's an interesting question, Glenn, and I'll tell you why. There's been a lot of focus on the physicality of this team all season long. If there has been a storyline aside from, you know, the goal chase, for example, it has definitely been, this is a team with more fighting majors by a mile and a half or two than any other team in the NHL. It would take some kind of extravaganza of pugilism for another team to even challenge for that title at this point in the season. But when you really talk about it, it's not so much the fighting. The physical side of things is stopping the other team from having easy access to the zone. And it's stopping them from coming in. It's shot suppression. It's making sure that you're limiting chances. That's where the real physicality comes in. It's not just punching somebody, fighting somebody, but it's saying, I'm going to do this so you can't get down the ice. And when you try to do it, you're going to think twice about it and maybe make a decision to pass or dump and chase instead. And they're putting themselves in situations that makes it easier for them to defend instead of letting the other team walk into the zone. And those games where things haven't been going so well are games that have had a lot of shots. And I think when you see them doing the right things, you see those shots really come down for the other team. That's where they're going to be successful in the playoffs, especially against a team like Colorado, who just puts up huge numbers every night.
And Sean Smith of On the Forecheck joining us right now on Penalty Box Radio. Sean, I know we just focused on some positive, but let's look at something that might have been questionable over the weekend and something we brought up before going to break, which is starting Ussasaros in a back-to-back situation and understanding that, yes, it's pushing for the playoffs, but they are riding Ussasaros so much that I can't imagine how exhausted he potentially could be. Yeah, he's young, he's a professional athlete, all those things, but does it concern you at all with him having played 65 games and Riddick only getting 10 starts this season?
It only concerns me in the sense that if they're not suppressing those shots, they're giving him a rough night on the ice. If they're doing their jobs, if the other five skaters on the ice at any given time are keeping those high danger chances away from Ussasaros, then Saros' night gets a lot easier, and I think you ride the horse that's winning the race right now. If you start to see him getting lit up on a nightly basis, that's when you know, okay, this is going to be a problem. He's going to get worn down faster. But as long as he's getting pretty light workloads because of the team's play in front of him, I think he's going to be fine.
All right, that's very fair. So following up on that then, of the five games remaining, do you think Saros is going to start those first four of the five and Riddick only get Arizona?
I think it depends on how quickly they can shore up a playoff spot. I think the magic number as it stands is down to four. Mm-hmm. A combination of a win and a loss by, I'm not sure if it's Vegas or Vancouver at this point, pretty much seals things up for them. So I feel like if they can take care of that early, that's when you rest Saros and you let Riddick take some time out there.
That's very fair. And so we saw, unfortunately, Jeremy Lauzon went down with an injury. It just prior to that, what have you seen from him and how important would it be to have him back for the playoffs?
The thing I like about Lauzon, and this was really, I think, an unfair reaction when he was when they made the trade at the deadline for him. You're seeing a player who in his previous teams in those situations wasn't being put in the best situation to be successful. And I think having him playing on a team with guys like Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm, especially for a team that's known for developing defensemen, I think you're taking a young guy who's kind of been in a rough spot with several of the teams he's been with and giving him a chance to really improve quickly playing with some very high caliber teammates. And he brings a smart physical element. He's not afraid to drop the gloves, but he also makes some pretty good hits that really just slow down the pace of play. And that's what we were talking about earlier. So he would be great to have back. I think as much as I hate to say it, as I've always mentioned, you know, I'm a big fan of the third pairing. I'm a big, big supporter of Matt Benning, but I think Lauzon is probably the guy in that spot going forward once he gets healthy.
Oh, I 100% agree. And as long as Ben Harper doesn't hit the ice. All right. They make it to the playoffs, and players that aren't Roman Josi, aren't Matt Duchene, aren't Philip Forsberg, Johansson, or Granlund. Who's the player that you think not necessarily needs to step up, but needs to continue what they've done for the regular season, or could be that surprise player that is that guy that has that timely goal that could get an overtime victory? Who's one of those guys that you think has it in and that could step up in a situation where they're absolutely needed that is not considered one of the star players?
I think right now, if you take a look at the fourth line that John Hines has been putting on the ice, you could name any one of those three youngsters out there and say that they could step up at any moment and start contributing massively offensively. I really like what they're putting out there. I like the product that they bring when they're together on the ice. Tolvanen, Tomasino, Glass, any one of those three guys could go out there and be an absolute game changer for the Predators.
Oh, absolutely could. And so looking at potential future matchups, we've seen how they play against Calgary, and we're going to see again how they play against Calgary in a deja vu Tuesday night against Calgary at home next week. If that ends up being the matchup, which is very likely that it could be, what do you think works in the Predators' favor against a team like Calgary?
I don't know that Calgary has as much depth offensively as it may appear that they do. I think once you get past the first couple of lines, I'm going to say this and it's going to sound really bad. I love Cale Yarncroak, but that's the guy on their third line that is supposed to come in and make a difference. And we've seen at length and up close and very personal what Yarncroak is capable of. And it just doesn't seem like he's bringing it to that third line. When you compare it to the third line, the Predators have been putting out on the ice, the herd line, if you will, I think the Predators, believe it or not, are actually a deeper team offensively than the Flames. And so I think while they may be strong defensively, the Predators are also strong defensively. I think you see a mismatch as you get farther into the offensive depth.
All right, that's fair. So last question real quick to close it up here. Out of the East, so to keep this out of any bias coming out of the West, so you don't have to worry about that. Who do you think is the favorite coming out of the East, knowing how many really good teams there are over there?
Coming out of the East?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to say this, and this is a team that I saw kind of surging as not just this season, but last season as well. But the Florida Panthers are, they're not a team that I want any piece of. I think they're scary on every level, and I think they could go a long way.
Oh, I agree. I mean, they're 10-0-0 in their last 10. They only have 15 regulation losses. I mean, yeah, how could you not pick them? That's a very solid choice. Now, hopefully their fans show up to support them. That's the big thing they need down there.
Goodness.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Sean, thank you so much for your insight. Really appreciate it, man. Fantastic work as always.
Hey, anytime you need me, just let me know and I'll be happy to join you.
Perfect. Thanks, bud. That is Sean Smith with On the Forecheck. You can follow him on Twitter at SCSOTF. Has fantastic coverage of the game, and he always gives a different look as well with exactly what he's trying to look for in every single game that he's covering. So make sure you give him a follow on Twitter. Okay, up next, Scott Wren, good friend of the show. We're going to talk with him from Nashville Fire Department hockey team about a fun, great charity event coming up in Chicago that he's going to participate in. Always doing great work with charity hockey. So that's up next, Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Jared taking care of us. And up next, great friend of the show, always doing fantastic work in the hockey community and playing for Nashville Fire, Scott Wren. Welcome to the program, bud.
Hey, Justin, how are you doing?
Doing all right, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us and talking to us about another fantastic event that you guys are participating in. Not going to be local this time, but it's the First Responder Charity Games for Pucks for Autism up in Chicago. Just tell us about the event and what it is and what you guys are going to be doing up there.
Well, thanks for having me on. Allow us to do this. I mean, you guys have always been a great friend of the NFD hockey and really the hockey community here in Middle Tennessee. Well, we got approached, goodness gracious, about 2 months ago to go up to Chicago and play for Pucks for Autism. And it's a several day event, but we're playing on Saturday before the Chicago Wolves game at 2:30, and we're playing Illinois' Bravest, which is a hockey team of suburban firefighters. And we're trying to raise money for autism through the organization called Pucks for Autism. And the monies that they raise through these events, there's several games that day and really throughout the weekend. And then I think they've got a tournament in June as well. And those monies will go for just assisting with families that have children with autism. And then also with adults that have autism, allowing them to get educated and be able to get jobs and so on and so forth within the communities.
Yeah, this is fantastic. Pucks for Autism, for those that don't know, it's a 501c3, like he mentioned, it hosts hockey events to raise awareness and acceptance of individuals on the autism spectrum, which is just fantastic. Scott, I know you're looking forward to the game itself, since we all love the sport, but hearing about who these games are going to positively benefit, how inspired do you feel when you see so many of you coming together for a weekend for such a good cause in the name of hockey?
It's, you know, anytime you do a charity, it's very inspirational. It's difficult work leaving into it. You know, for the folks that are running Pucks for Autism, we've been in touch with them literally every day for, I want to say, about the week and a half. And I know what those individuals are going through because I do it myself. And at the end of the day, when you see the monies and you know what it's going for, and then you get contacted later and you're seeing the individuals that you're helping, either through, we're doing it through the burn unit, or we're doing, you know, causes here in Middle Tennessee, or for a great organization like Pucks for Autism. When you get to see those pictures later and you see where your money's going and you see the inspiration, how those kids and even adults are being led by this and being assisted by this organization, it's extremely uplifting, and you know you've done something well. And the guys and the gals that skate on the team are just love doing it.
And Scott, I just want to touch on just Nashville Fire Hockey briefly, because if people are wanting to get involved, show their support, they want to give back, they love what you're doing, but they're unable to make it to, let's say, like the Charity of Games events, how can they help and show their support, even if they're not able to physically go to these charity games?
Yeah, you know, like, we're out of Nashville, and the fan base that we have obviously is right out of Nashville, and some of them just can't make it up to Chicago for the game. On our social media sites, and then on my personal social media sites as well, and I've tagged you guys on Penalty Box because you're one of my favorite hockey radio stations I love to listen to. You can go to that Pucks for Autism. We've got the link on there. And you can contribute if you want to contribute and show your support. Our Facebook and I believe it's our Instagram pages is always have, you know, our links to whatever organization we're playing for or working with. And like I said, Pucks for Autism, we didn't even hesitate when we got the phone call to come up and play.
And Scott Wren of NFD Hockey joining us right now on Penalty Box Radio. And like you said, on Twitter, I gave that a retweet, so you can go check out on Twitter the link there to make sure that you can give. And then if you're on Facebook, you can also go on Facebook at NFD Hockey on Facebook to find more information on that. So Scott, for you too, I'm sure it's always special when you're able to go to Chicago, if people can't tell from your accent, I'm sure it's special for you to be able to go back up there as well. How fun is that to get back up there too, to a place that you're so familiar with, to be able to be involved in a charity event and in a place that's like home to you still?
It's great. Cause I got family that still lives in the area, and go up to see them and they give them a chance to come see me play. They haven't for 20 or 30 years. It's been a while. But I also get to touch base. We made a lot of good friends up there with Chicago Fire. Obviously, several of the distant suburban teams, you know, you had the Illinois Flames and then also the Illinois Bravest. So we enjoy playing. The older I get, the less I like being on the ice. They all seem to get a lot younger. I don't know how that works. I'm getting a lot older, but everybody seems to get a lot younger. I still have a good time, you know, and it's good to see everybody. And on this particular event, I was a Chicago Wolves fan when they first came in back in the early 90s and stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun for me to be on the ice. A kid that I played with when I was growing up, he's no longer doing it, but he was Skates, their mascot, for a while. He was able to get out and do that. And, you know, so he's actually, I tried to get him to come out and play with us, but he no longer skates anymore.
And Scott, when you having to make a trip like this, this is now getting to the nitty gritty details. Is every person driving up alone? Or are you guys packing all that stinky hockey equipment up like in a van? You're having to deal with that for like an 8-hour drive.
Well, we've got one or two that are driving. I'm flying up. I'm going to fly up and then fly back early Sunday morning because I'm actually over 50 league on Sunday afternoon. So the poor airport's going to have to deal with my gear on the way back. But on the way up, I've got somebody driving my gear. And that individual is actually driving several pieces of gear. So he can deal with that on the way in. I'm sure he'll have the windows open and a few air fresheners hanging.
Oh, I can't imagine the smell.
Oh, yeah, especially when we go back, you know, after you get done playing.
Oh, yeah.
You're just going to throw it in your bag and then dump it somewhere. And then when you get on the air, you go to the airport the next morning, you know, the dog's going to probably start whining when he goes sniffing that bag.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So, Scott, aside from this event, are there any other events that are coming up for NFT hockey here locally or things that maybe aren't necessarily totally planned yet that we should just keep an eye out for?
Yes, we're still working with our Memorial game, and we're going to try to do again the September. Do that, you know, try to get that event going. And then I'm also going to work with Boom Boom Jeffrey, Danny Jeffrey on for his Boom Boom Company. We're going to try to put a first responder division in there. And right now we're going to keep it somewhat small. Danny wants to keep it between 4 and 6 teams and just start out small, kind of an invitational thing. Metro Police Department will be involved. Chicago Fire is already committed to it. We're waiting to hear from South Bend, Indiana, and Chicago PD. So if we can get those teams involved, and we'll have hopefully a little first responder tournament there at the end of July. And like I said, then our Memorial game. And I think anything after that, hopefully we have no incidences, no nothing come up. We'll have to raise money for one of our own here in Middle Tennessee.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I know we'll make sure to have you on again to talk about that and do what we can to promote that. But folks, as always, make sure you're checking out NFT Hockey there for how you can support this team and all the great work they're doing in the community to raise money for charity and all the events they do. And Scott, as always, we certainly appreciate you joining us and good luck up there. Go and have fun. And, you know, we're supporting you from down in Nashville.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on.
Absolutely. Folks, that is Scott Wren. He is with NFT Hockey, the Nashville Fire hockey team, and great event coming up in Chicago. So, hey, if you're listening to us in the Chicago area, if you're in Wisconsin, go and watch Nashville Fire hockey, raising money for Pucks for Autism, and then also have a way that you can support them there too with that event. And go on Twitter. He tweeted me the link. Look at that retweet that I gave him. And that's how you're going to be able to be able to support the event. Glenn.
Yeah, it's awesome because I had not heard of Pucks for Autism until I saw the charity event. And it's pretty incredible. I mean, they are a 501c3 that works with and supports other 501c3. So in this particular game, it's going to be, donations are going to be going to the CEDAW Foundation, which provides physically, mentally, and emotionally challenged children, like Scott said, even adults from ages 3 to 22 with educational opportunities where public funding in that area falls incredibly short. A lot of these children come from less than ideal situations at home. So it's pretty incredible to be able to support such a mission. And it's also amazing how Pucks for Autism serves as this beautiful liaison between the sport that we love and giving back to people who need the support. So I love to see that Nashville Fire is going to be participating in this. So yeah, like Justin said, if you're in the Chicago area, go to the game, show your support. It's for an incredible cause.
And it's at Allstate Arena in Chicago, and the Chicago Wolves are involved. And remember, there's a slight connection with Nashville and the Chicago Wolves because that was the affiliate that was shared last season during the weird year as well. So always thankful for Scott and the charity work that Nashville Fire Department is doing there too. Okay. We received a lot of questions. So we're going to go ahead and go to break now because I want to make sure we get to all the questions that you asked us on Twitter. So things about who should be eating crow, about Duchesne, about Forsberg resigning again, about Hines possibly getting an extension, a great question comparing Roman Josi and Shea Weber, about using Riddick more, and there's a Moon Knight question as well that obviously I think I'm going to have to answer and not Glenn. So
Google right over the break.
we'll address that up next. Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, producer Jared taking care of us. All right, always. Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, yeah, I was going to say he's always taken such good care of us. But Justin, before we get to the questions, I have to bring this up. I'm going to put on my interviewer hat because you are in the middle of a big life change that I think is incredibly relevant to this show. You are marrying your love for sports marketing and helping others in a new career. So tell us everything. Tell me where you're headed. What are you going to be doing?
Yeah. So on Monday, I started with Special Olympics Tennessee as their new and first ever marketing director. So I just finished my third day there at the day job. So it's just been fantastic and incredible to learn about the great work that they do with so many athletes across our state, and then just learn more about the Special Olympics organization as a whole, Special Olympics International, and realizing how large of an organization it is and how many thousands upon thousands of people they work with and help to give great experiences day in and day out to athletes. It's so incredible to learn about this and realize how big it is too, because in June, the USA Games are taking place down in Orlando at Walt Disney World. And we are sending close to 100 athletes down there from sports range from flag football to golf to powerlifting to swimming, basketball. It's bocce ball. It is pretty incredible how many sports are offered to athletes in the Special Olympics, including, granted, it's not here in Tennessee, but they surfing and paddleboarding are events too that happen in it. And they're continuing to work on adding more winter sports too, trying to get more involved in skating. And I think curling's been in there, esports. As well. So I know there's been talks with Scott Hamilton before on skating and things like that too. So it's one of those things that's obviously gonna be a passion of mine, working on the hockey inspired things like skating or floor hockey to try to get those involved as well too, because I just love to continue to see more interest in the sport happen. And I know the Natural Predators are great partners with the Natural Predator Foundation of Special Olympics Tennessee. And so it's just incredible. And I can't wait to continue to learn more. And I cannot wait to get down to Orlando to cover all these great athletes and what they're doing at Special Olympics USA Games, which only happened once every 4 years. Like, this is a very big deal, folks. The opening ceremonies will be on ESPN. You'll be able to watch. So you're going to have to look for me, because I'll be marching along with our athletes as part of the Tennessee delegation of Team Tennessee. So I'm just incredibly honored. And yeah, I'm excited.
I just don't think you could have landed in a better spot doing in this role and being the first in the marketing world. That's just, you're going to take this place to unseen heights, and I'm super excited for you. And I'm also very, very proud.
Thank you. That means a lot. So it's, I can't wait to be able to write stories and do the things that I do for my job now. Yes. And tell incredible stories. So let's get into our questions. This one comes from guest co-hosted with us before, Abigail Martin. Do you believe Hines gets an extension? If not, who would you potentially like to see fill the role? Glenn?
I do believe he gets an extension. I don't imagine a scenario where he doesn't. And when I look around at the, I don't know, of people that were, you know, on the hot seat at this given moment in the league, I don't really see anybody that I'd potentially even like to come in unless we moved up from Milwaukee, right? So I'd possibly like to see a Carl Taylor, but I don't even want to imagine a scenario right now, because I feel like John Hines really did something with this team. He got people to play their most confident games this season. And I know the players have talked openly about how the conversations with him went. We obviously saw that result on the ice. So I just don't want to imagine this team having to start over with somebody else if he doesn't get an extension. So I'm going to say he gets one.
Yeah. I think as well, I think it'd be like a 2-year thing. I don't think John Hines is on the hot seat aside from a few outspoken fans that are the loud minority. Mm-hmm. Overall, and I think that's what it is. It's the loud minority of fans that are just on fire Hines, because there's been something that he's been able to bring out in this team to be difficult to play against. And yes, they have depth, and overall they've done better than I think we thought they would do this season. They're still ending up in the same area, which is kind of on the bubble. They just got to this point differently than we thought they would, because I thought they'd be just kind of roller coastery all season, up and down, ebbs and flows, but they had some really hot times mm-hmm. just about a month ago. And that shows the potential this team has if they stay together and just continue to add more pieces, let the young players grow and get more mature in the system as well too. So I think I would want to see more of what John Hines has. I mean, if you have two 40 goal scorers and a Roman Josi that gets 90 plus points in a season, that's, I mean, it's on the players too, but it means the system is boding well for the players and playing into the system. That's helping them be successful too. So I'd like to see more. If not, yeah, I'd like to see a Carl Taylor or Dan Hino. I just don't think that's going to happen. Carl Taylor's time is coming though. And I'd hate for the Predators to lose him because it is absolutely coming. He is an incredible coach and I love what he's been able to do. And you just see how the Milwaukee Admirals start off really rough this season and it's not rough anymore.
Look at them.
Yeah. All right. This next one comes from Alex. Does Forsberg re-signing in July possibly hinge on a deep playoff run? Obviously, it would make his decision easier than Preds do, but would another early round exit put a damper on negotiations? I don't think so at this moment because I think the team has shown what they can do with him and the potential mm-hmm. they have. And I think even if they miss the playoffs right now, if it's close, I don't think it's going to change much because you see the potential they have of what they can do when they're playing together in the system. Obviously, I think it helps even more when they go in, but I don't see this team making it past the second round. That's the problem there. So I don't think a deep playoff run are in the cards. And I could be absolutely wrong. I mean, I can absolutely mm-hmm. eat crow on that, but I think right now it's the signs point to something positive more than anything else because of the potential of the team.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would put more of a damper on negotiations if this team was just a train wreck all season. Mm-hmm. But see, like you said, Justin, seeing the potential and seeing what they actually do have, I think it's still going to make his decision. I think he wants to be here.
Yes, I agree. This one comes from Kyle. If Moon Knight and a moon pie with Luna Lovegood while listening to Neon Moon, what kind of cheese would the moon be made of? I'm going with Munster. Is what I'm going with.
Okay. All I hear is Neon Moon by Brooks and Dunn in that statement. I don't know anything else. Luna Lovegood sounds like a very beautiful name. I'm about to Google that.
It's Harry Potter. Come on, Glenn.
Oh, well, it's been so long. I haven't watched Harry Potter since we binged watched it at your house and made
Butter. Oh, my gosh.
Way to go. Oh
jeez. Okay, because we got a roll here. This one comes from Cody, who has to eat the biggest plate of crow for Duchesne going from unprotected to a 40-goal scorer. I think a ton of people. I mean, a lot of the fan base, a lot of media people, but I understand why that happened. I think it's one of those things they didn't expect anyone. I didn't think they expected Seattle to take Duchesne more than anything else because mm-hmm. of the contract situation. Obviously now that'd be very different potentially, but there's so many talking heads. I probably can't even name all of them. And I don't even remember what I said.
I even reading that question, I was like, was I on board? But I think at minimum, I think it's like 16,158. I think it's like 1,000 shy of how many can fit in Bridgestone and then some, because that obviously you have to go outside the scope of Bridgestone Arena. So yeah, there's a lot of people.
And it's a pleasant surprise. I mean, now you see 8 million, you're like, okay, he's a 40 goal scorer. He's a 40 goal scorer.
Okay. Yep. Yeah.
And is he going to repeat that? Probably not. But if you could count on Matt Duchesne to score 30 goals, or even not just that, but put up 65 to 70 points a mm-hmm. season for at least the next two or three seasons, then you're getting your money's worth way more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. This one comes from Nashville Rain. If we don't trust Riddick enough, why aren't we pulling up Ingram? Why toss our superstar goalie into back-to-back games? Riddick should have started one of the two games over the weekend. He should have started more games this season overall. And this is nothing against Saros. Just goalies need rest, especially with mm-hmm. this compressed schedule in the month of April. Goalies need rest. And that's just one of my questions there, too, of why you're not playing him more. If you are confident enough in what he could potentially do to help you win a game, you got to play him. And, yeah, I think it's going to be difficult to see unless they clinch a playoff berth. I think the only game David Riddick starts to close off the season is Arizona.
Yeah, and we've talked about it so many times, and so have other people. I mean, a team is only as good in the playoffs as their starting goaltender, and you do not want to run him ragged. That's the last thing you want to do. And like Sean mentioned earlier, as long as the team in front of him is playing well, his load is going to be lightened, but still ultimately you want him to be rested.
Yeah, Absolutely. Okay, last question. This one comes from Hockey Girl on Twitter. Compare Shea Weber's leadership as a D-man scorer, as a D-man, the defendant more than score usually, to Roman Yossi's leadership as a D-man scorer. Both captains discuss. Glenn, you go first on this one.
That's actually I like this question. I think I kind of see similarities in them. Obviously, Roman Yossi came here at a very young age and was in Shea Weber's shadow for a very long time. But I think that they both have a very soft-spoken approach to leadership. And so I kind of see them similar in that regard. But, comparing the two, I feel like I have to – no, she's not asking me to pick. I think they're both fantastic, but I think they both ran a very similar leadership game, if that makes sense. Yep. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It's more of that they lead by the actions they take on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you see in terms of that type of leadership. And here's the thing. We do not know what goes on in a locker room when it's just the team in there. We only see what goes on. This is even pre-pandemic now. We only see what goes on when we were allowed in there as media. And things have already cleared up. Speeches are already done. They say what they say. We know Shea Weber did not have having a camera in front of his face, but as soon as that camera was down, he was able to joke around and was really relaxed and everything. Roman Yossi, he's obviously been the person that's been put in front of the camera a lot as the captain, and he's had to speak a lot, and he answers questions. A lot of times it's cliche, but he does his best, I think, to answer questions as well. But the leadership style, I think, is leading by example more than anything else. Shea Weber is obviously one of those guys is going to be a bruiser, hard-hitting, willing to fight, big-time slapper. Roman Yossi is more of the finesse speed guy that is going to have your zone exit and entry in the same possession by the same player and put some points on the board too. But I think it's that type of thing towards leading by example, and as well as multiple leaders in the locker room. So they're very, very different styles in terms of the way they play. But I think in terms of style of leadership, it's that lead by example. And I'm going to put the team on my back when I have to. I'm going to score a timely goal, because Weber scored timely goals before too, from the point. And that's the type of the leaders that I think that they have been. And I think Roman Yossi learned a lot of that from Shea Weber, because he was mentored by Shea Weber too. All right. Yep. All right. Well, folks, as always, we appreciate you tuning in. Big thanks to our guests, Sean Smith and Scott Wren. And as always, a big thank you to Jared Cassidy for taking care of us back in the booth. And for Glenn Blackwell, this is Justin Bradford. Thanks so much for tuning in to Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.